Most leaders have already tried AI, Copilot, ChatGPT, Claude, but they're wondering why it's more difficult than it seems, maybe creating more work than it actually should. Well, my guest today has been working with AI since the early 1990s, and he says the problem isn't you, it's that you've started too big. Welcome to The Debrief Show, the show for leaders who want to bring out the best in their communications, themselves and their teams. I'm Dee Clayton, your host, a multi-award-winning executive coach and trainer and a communications expert. My guest today is Bryce Redford, and Bryce has been working with AI since long before any of us knew it was a thing. He works with organisations on how to use it well. He's one of those rare people that can make something really complicated seem really quite simple. Today, we're talking about how to cut through the AI noise and find a simpler path. Not theory, but what actually works from someone who's been in this field for decades. So welcome to the show, Bryce. Thank you for joining us, Bryce. It's lovely to see you. You're in sunny Scotland.
Yes, and thank you for the invite to join you.
So the reason I wanted to get you on the show and share your knowledge with the audience is because you have a knack. Ever since I met you many years ago, I'm going to say 20 years ago.
Probably that long, yeah.
So we met on NLP Master Training and Trainers Training. For those of you that don't know about NLP, we can talk a little bit about that later, but we met when we were learning our skills. And I really noticed from day one of meeting you that you thought very differently from other people. I think you're aware of this. What would you say is how would you describe your different way of thinking if you're aware of it? How do you think differently to other people, do you think?
I think fundamentally, constantly curious to what's going on behind what's going on, which is a very NLP term. But understanding what's really going on, what's the patterns, what's the interconnections, what's the relationships that actually underpin a lot of what we do in the world around us. But it's that curiosity is the thing that drives it the most.
Yeah, and what I found with you that was really different is you can go down into the minutest detail way more than I can go down into, and you can chunk back up to the huge big picture, and you can do both of those without any, it seems to me, without any problem at all, which I think is quite rare as well, do you think?
Yes, it's definitely. It's something that fascinates me about that, going from the big picture to the detail. It's, again, it fits with that curiosity. It's looking for those patterns that underpin things and getting a sense of if there's something, feels like something's missing. I want to sort of dig a bit deeper and explore a bit more. And yeah, it's that sense of being on the frontier, finding, you know, new avenues, new insights, innovation, and really, yeah, just exploring.
So AI is a rich place then for you to be exploring, isn't it? Because it's new for most people. I mean, you've probably been looking at it for years. Tell me a little bit about your AI background. How long have you been looking at it for? Obviously, it is really interesting to you because it's, as you say, new, but it's not that new. So how, yeah, tell us a little bit about your AI journey.
I think for many people, AI has become common in terms of language now, but it's also become synonymous with large language models, and the likes of ChatGPT made a big difference there. But AI has been around for a very, very long time. So in the 1940s, AI started to come around. And my first introduction to AI was probably the 1990s, when they started looking at knowledge management systems and how you could, and it's very rules-based then, but it was very much around how you could pull the knowledge of an environment and get new insights, new understanding from that knowledge base. So that was the initial foray into it. And for a long time, AI went quiet. So you would see it in a lot of tools around about. So for example, number plate recognition systems on your phone, when you've got that neat capability to edit on your phone or remove things, or what they call computational photography, and your iPhone makes the picture look almost better than it was.
Yeah.
So AI has been around in lots of different ways, and I've been playing around with it in those different ways. But it's only recently, when we've come across generative AI, where the role of AI has changed, that it's really become something that opens up brand new possibilities. Didn't exist, because a lot of it before was about automation or making something simpler. But now you've got the ability to create something directly from your imagination.
So it's more available to normal people now rather than IT people, but it sounds like you've been looking at it for a long time.
Yeah. And the other aspect that's changed a bit is the ability to interact with AI tools with natural language. So you can just type on a keyboard or talk to them these days, and it's able to interact at a very simplistic level, but you can get some very good results back. That's what it's like.
So when you said you were looking at AI and you're going to write a book and everything like that, I thought, well, you're the one that's going to make it more simple for normal people like me to understand. And tell us a little bit about your book, what inspired you to write it, and what are some of the key themes around your book?
I think what inspired me to write it was there was a lot of hype around AI around about. And I started the book probably 2 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken me longer than I anticipated to write it. But when I started, it was a lot about the early days of generative AI, and ChatGPT was getting a lot of coverage. But there was a lot of negative hype around it, going, here's all the reasons why AI is not a good thing, particularly in the press. And yet my experience with it was, how can AI help me do things faster, easier, simpler? What new insights can it generate? So it became much more of a tool of exploration. And I thought there was a big difference between the perception out in the media and my direct experience. I thought it'd be worth exploring that in a book. So part of the writing process was just taking that through the steps, going, that initial experience of feeling like, am I going to be left behind? Because the technology was moving very fast, and on the surface it seemed to be very complicated. And yet I thought, it's probably not as complicated as it appears. And that started me getting to explore and look at it. So a lot
you
of
think it's
around,
not complicated? I think it is.
And again, that's part of the kind of way I look at things is, you know, how do I simplify? How do I get to the heart and matter? What's the difference that makes the difference? What's the critical distinctions that are really important that give you good leverage in what you're doing?
So what are some of the, well, first of all, maybe we've talked a little bit about NLP. This isn't a podcast about NLP per se, but how does your fundamental, like your foundation of NLP, help you to look at AI through a different lens? So what is NLP for those that you don't know, and how does it help you?
So NLP is an acronym, stands for neuro-linguistic programming, in one context, but it also stands for natural language processing in another. So for NLP, in the context of AI, it's natural language processing, but also you can do it in terms of the training and linguistics. And what I found is there's a huge overlap between them, because part of the NLP as a neuro-linguistic programming, you understand the structure of language and how to go from a big picture to detail, and what are the relationships and patterns, and how language operates in terms of encoding information in the very essence of the way we speak. And knowing that opens up a huge door within the AI world, because if you understand the structure of language, it makes it easier to get what you're looking for from an AI system.
So,
because
without
AI
being
fundamentally...
Go on.
So AI fundamentally is working on probabilities of what's the next pattern that's going to come out based on the likelihood, and understanding meaning by the similarity of the meaning of one word for another, and what's the relationship that affects that meaning.
Yeah. And for people that don't think at that level that you're thinking at now, you explained this really nicely to me. So tell me about these little parcels. So I think the AI is made up of little parcels you're explaining to me. Tell us about the little parcels and how it's not really a real conversation that I think I'm having with AI.
Yeah, there's a word that they use, you'll see mentioned in the context of AI, called a token. And effectively that means a bit of information. And what it's working out is, based on one bit of information, what's the likelihood of the next one? And the thing that most people would have been experienced that directly with is predictive text. So on your mobile phone, when it's predicting, it's basically going, based on the character that you've just entered, what is the likelihood of the next character? So there's two aspects to that. There's the pure probability on what it's seen before. So AI systems are trained on huge amounts of information and data. So it's working on, based on that huge volume of information it's seen in the past, what is the probability of the next character? But it's also working on, given the context, because all meaning is context dependent, which is another aspect for neuro-linguistic programming. Based on the context will directly change the probability of what's going to happen next. So when people talk about creating a prompt or asking a question, how you word it will get different answers because you're actually changing the context. And a simple analogy is, if you think of a head of nation or a monarch, and you think of king versus queen, the difference is gender. So monarch combined with male would give you a king. Monarch and female would give you queen. So that shift in context will give you a different word. And AI represents that in mathematics. So there's a huge amount of maths behind the technology, which is more complicated than I understand.
Yeah, well, me too. So what came to my mind when you were explaining tokens to me was that really AI doesn't understand me. So when you talk to AI, it feels like it understands you because it's sort of saying all this stuff and you're like, oh yeah, that's very good. And I think then it understands me. And then 10 minutes later, it says something that's completely wrong. So I think I've done all this work to get some piece of work out of it. And yeah, you really get what I'm talking about. And then it pops out something really off-piste or out of date, or, you know, so it's not the same as talking to a human, but it feels like it is. I think your explanation of tokens, it might be something else as well as tokens, but your explanation really helped me to see that however real it feels, it still isn't real. It's just gone, I think the next word D wants is this, or the next bit of a word, because a token isn't even a word. You said it's like a bit of a word, right?
Yeah, it can be a word or a bit of a word. So it's fragments and how it builds those up based on probability. But there's more to that, and this is where you go into the detail. The probability is influenced by a huge number of things, context being one of them, but it's also got the relationship between things. So if you think of it in a human context, we create meaning in our mind's eye based on context and experience. Now, AI systems are trained on huge amounts of data and language, which inherently encodes context and meaning and experience. So it comes across as very realistic because it's actually a mirror on human dialogue through lots of sources on the internet and around the world. So lots of data has been used to really does mirror what happens for us in terms of conversation.
But when you drill down on it, the content isn't, you know, it doesn't have the depth, does it? Because you might say, oh, why do you say that? And then it goes, I've no idea why I said that.
A lot of that is changing very rapidly. So if you look at 2025, and now we're just into 2026 now, but through 2025, there was huge leaps in terms of how AI technology worked and the quality of the response you got. And for many people, it could actually, who were using it a lot, could see that it was changing on a week-to-week basis. And if you looked at video, for example, AI generating a video, there's a famous one with Will Smith where he was eating spaghetti and it looked, I mean, it was this ridiculous in terms of the video, but it made people laugh. And now AI can create video is actually very difficult to tell from reality. And you've got the idea of deep fakes and stuff. And there's a huge amount of shift, but a lot of that is about it learning more and more as it goes. There's feedback loops going on that means AI gets better and better. So AI as it is today is the worst it'll ever be. It's just going to get better.
Better and better. So there's these tokens, there's the idea of context, there's the idea of relationships. Any other key things under the bonnet that we can benefit from knowing about?
I think the fundamental bit is it is just a tool. I think by adding the word intelligence onto it, it creates a perception that it's something that's probably not there yet. Because it does, you know, if you chat with ChatGPT, even the language you're using now is you have a chat with an AI. It creates the impression that it has significant intelligence. But at some level, what is intelligence? So you can get down quite a rabbit hole around defining what intelligence is and what it means and what it takes to be intelligent. And there's various tests that they go, what does that mean and how far is it advanced in terms of the intelligence curves? But essentially, it is just its relationships between bits of information. But even if you're chatting, how many times have you chatted to a friend and you've come from different places? Like one of you goes, I thought you meant, and they went, no, it was something completely different. And you have that same human experience with technology, because again, there can be differences because how we store and relate to information ourselves is actually different from each other and different from the technology. So it's actually quite fascinating.
Yeah. So if we want to use AI to get ahead or stay ahead or be more efficient, what are some areas at the moment for 2026 that you think this is a good place to use it for an average person, not somebody who's got all your knowledge, but for an average person like me who's keen to try it? I've done quite a lot of GPT, but I'm not a programmer. For somebody like me or a leader of a team, our listeners, they're busy. They haven't got time to learn ChatGPT. What's some good things they can do with it that's relatively easy and successful? And what are some things that you would recommend maybe steering away from trying at the moment? Maybe they'd be brilliant in 6 months or a year, but, you know, for now.
Get away from complexity and make it go for simplicity. So start with small stuff. Like, where have you got an area that you would like some help with? Something that you're finding difficult or you don't enjoy doing, and could AI help you? So it's almost like getting a mindset of AI first. So how can it amplify your neat human strengths? So if you want to learn something, you can use AI, for example, ChatGPT, as a tutor. It's like, teach me about. And you can start to enhance your knowledge in a particular area, which is great. You're developing your career, you want to build on something, knowledge you've got already, or ask it questions. I'm trying to do this and I'd like, so being able to use that as a knowledge base. That's a very simple way of using the technology in terms of the generative AI. Definitely steer away from generating pictures of kittens. There's enough of them on the internet already.
Yeah.
But yeah, just start small and go, what's the thing that would make a difference? One of the areas that I started with was summarizing documents. It's like asking questions like, from all this information, what's the key points? Give me an overview, which is come back to that big picture.
Yeah. So that I've got the Copilot is good for that. If people got the paid for version of Copilot, it summarizes those things for you. That's quite a big advantage, I think, if people have got that, or disadvantage if people don't. I know businesses are at very different stages, aren't they? Some businesses have totally adopted it and all the way down the levels. Some people have just got it different levels and not others. And some people are like, especially if they've got a government defense project, they're like, we can't go anywhere near AI and let it into our systems at all. So we've got all these sort of different layers, haven't we, of people that want to and or can use AI.
Yeah. And it's also useful to understand, what your data is used for. So if you're using Microsoft Copilot in a enterprise environment, you've got enterprise data protection, so your information is protected from going outside your organization. Whereas ChatGPT, you wouldn't want to put anything sensitive into ChatGPT if you weren't happy that it would actually get out. But because of the sheer volume of data, it's actually diluted as well. So you would, a lot of the data wouldn't necessarily come back to be identified to you as an individual. So is that, but it is about, don't put stuff in there that, like, bank account details and other bits of information. But other stuff, it's very useful to be able to use it to explore topics.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm still rewriting my book that you helped me with the first time round, I think. And it's not my day job, so it's taking me a long time because I'm trying to sort of squeeze it in between. And I thought, AI can help me, write the book, but it's too complex for it to help me write it. But I think it's going to be really helpful in proofreading and taking a couple of paragraphs and saying, what does this mean and how else can I write this? I've used it in that way, but writing a whole book with AI, I'd lose the meaning of it and it would get a bit muddled because it can't handle those layers. From what I've seen, it can't handle the layers of complexity yet, without specific programming knowledge. Would you say that's true? Or
it's very true. It's similar to the human experience of overwhelm. Basically, it either forgets stuff or just can't process that sheer volume of data in one chunk. And the technical term for that is the context window. And different AI tools have got different capability in that space. So some got a much larger ability to handle big bits of data, and others are a bit more stretched on it. So the idea of kind of taking a paragraph from that.
Yeah, so from what I know about context window, from what you said to me, and I had a chat with somebody yesterday as well, this is like how much it can have in its sort of working memory at one time, yeah. That short-term memory sort of thing.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more in simple terms about the context window and what that means for us.
All of us have that ability to track a conversation up to a point, and then we had that feeling of getting lost. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's too much, we've gone into too much detail or too many variations. Well, AI is the same. It's got that same ability to just get lost or forget something. So you might find that you have to tell it the same things again and again and again. And there's lots of tools that have been introduced as part of generative AI, things like projects and agents that look to address that context window. For example, there's one of the tools similar to ChatGPT called Claude, and it's introduced something called skills, which means instead of having to use up part of your context window explaining something, you just ask it to use one of its skills. So, and you can create your own skills. So if you want it to do something in a certain way, for example, format a document in a certain style, you create that as a skill. And therefore, every time you want to do the document, you don't have to explain it to the AI. You just point it to the skill.
And does it do it consistently? Because I've tried to do things like this with GPT, and it does it the first time, and the second time it never does it again. I'm like, drives me mad.
Yeah, it can do it consistently as a result. But that's part of what they're realizing is when it's not consistent, people get frustrated, and therefore they introduce new capabilities that start to address those root problems. And that's why it's constantly evolving. It's not, it's very much each day it's a new thing, and they're introducing new models, new capabilities. So something you couldn't do yesterday, you could suddenly do today.
Yeah, like the images update that happened in December 2025. That was massive. Everyone was sending, you know, it was absolutely massive, wasn't it? Because it's so visual, you can see the actual difference in image quality and speed and all
absolutely.
Of that. Just in time for everyone to do, at the time, it was in time for everyone to do their Christmas and New Year visuals. So if it's changing so often, what are some of the things that you might advise us that are true over time? Because this podcast is going to be out of date by the time it gets out there, even probably, because as you say, everything's changing so quickly. So what are some of the truths, maybe from your book or just that from this conversation, that if we hold them, we'll be very successful with AI, no matter what year you listen to this podcast or watch the YouTube?
And there are some fundamental truths. And one of the challenges with writing the book is because things are changing so fast.
Yeah.
I kept thinking this book's going to be out of date.
Yeah.
The minute I write a paragraph, it's out of date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you step back and look at what are the core principles that we have as human beings and how we're going to interact with technology as it goes and develops, then there's a lot that gives us the human edge. And there's some fundamental principles that underpin that, and they will be throughout the technology evolving. Part of that is reframing your perspective on technology. So a dominant paradigm or frame at the moment is, you know, we're in competition with AI. So AI is going to take jobs, or AI is going to do this. And there is a big mind shift that will set you up for the future, which is shifting from competition to collaboration. And see AI as almost a partner that enhances your unique capabilities, not a rival to outpace. I think that is like a real, if we can get that right in terms of our mindset for the AI era, then that will make a big difference, because we'll be looking at going, okay, this is what I bring to it. How can AI help me? And definitely choose curiosity over fear. You know, approach new tools with willingness to explore, experiment, and learn. There's no right or wrong in this. A lot of it is about try it. You'll get a result. It might be the result you're looking for. It might be another result. but you'll always get a result. And it's that curiosity to explore and play with it. And definitely let go of the fear, because it's a tool that can really make a difference. And it's, you know, in many ways, it's that ability to embrace the technology. If you look back in history, we've had major innovations in technology, like the steam engine, the plow, factories. There's lots of things that have changed the way we operate in terms of relationship to our world. And they've been disruptive. But I think one of the most disruptive potential is AI. And absolutely move away from complexity to simplicity, to focus on how AI can make your life easier, not more complicated.
I wonder if my attitude would have already changed, because last week I spent literally days trying to do a project with AI, and I was really curious and I went down this route, and to some extent the project's sort of not done what I wanted. I was going to use the word fail, but I've learned a lot from it. So I'm feeling a bit like, but you know, I'm going to go back to simplicity, keeping it simple and making the project do what I want. So in that way, I'm a bit more hopeful that it won't overtake our jobs, because it's not yet able to do what I want it to do. So in that way, I feel a bit positive about it. Yeah, because all of the news is about it's going to take over all our jobs. It's going to, Microsoft Copilot will learn all our emails, and then there'll be no need for us. And then what is everyone going to do?
Yeah, and it's that fear mentality that is driven a lot by the media that actually sometimes leaves people wondering, you know, they want to get involved with this or not. And it's quite possible that there'll be a backlash against the technology, as there's been backlashes in the past for technology or changes. But I think it's here to stay. It's already embedded all around us. Your smartphone has already got AI in it to do the simplest things, from predictive text. You drive down a motorway and there's number recognition and average speed cameras, all built around AI. So it's not AI, just isn't just the generative AI that's become sort of front of mind with media. And very much adopt that human first mindset, you know, looking at how can I amplify your strengths, take a growth mindset rather than a fixed mindset, and really look at, you know, how can I develop, and practice a bit self-compassion, because sometimes learning something new can be a little bit challenging.
Yeah, I've experienced that this week. And it was only yesterday that I came to a new conclusion. So I'm just getting over it now. But that's it, isn't it? It's learning to handle the disappointment or the frustration of putting in that much time and it did or didn't work. But I've learned loads from it, actually, even though it's kind of a failure. Yeah. I've learned loads from it. And I think my next energy push into it will be very successful, because I've learned those painful lessons. Yeah. So maybe in the last couple of minutes that we have, you can help people not to go through a pain curve that I've gone through, or to go through a minimal pain curve. So I know you were talking about being curious, and are there any kind of quick wins? Keep it simple. You said don't be complex. Help yourself in some areas of life where you're finding it difficult. Make it do some value for you. Are there any other quick wins?
Start small and build momentum.
Yeah.
And remember that your human skills are your superpower. AI will be able to do some things in the future that perhaps that humans do in the moment. But hopefully it'll be the grunge work and the boring stuff and things that actually we don't really enjoy doing anyway.
Yeah.
An example of one of the things I got it to do recently, which, you know, is like when you run computer systems, there's often log files that basically go, here's the output of what I've done. And these log files can be very large, sometimes like 170,000 lines long. I mean, they're massive files. So if you want to understand a log file, going through it is not the most fun job. And it can take hours of just like looking through lines to go, is there anything wrong there? Is it working? And yet with AI now, you can do that in seconds. Mm. And it can give you a summary report going, I've looked through the log file, it's all looking fine. Great, or I've identified this error, and you're going to have to look at it. So getting rid of the grunge work that frees us up to do the more interesting stuff.
Yeah,
that can be really good. And make AI your creative co-pilot, and not co-pilot as in Microsoft co-pilot, which is great marketing.
Yeah.
But make it the co-pilot that it walks alongside you and helps you do the things that, you know, you've got that question, it'll answer the question for you. And also a lot about the best way of predicting the future is to create it. So use your human capability to go, well, what do I want it to be? Mm-hmm. And be part of guiding the future responsibility of AI rather than responsible use, rather than the doom and gloom of that you hear out in the media.
Yeah.
So how can we make the future better as a result of utilising this technology in ways that enhance the human experience?
I like that. Hey, we haven't touched on anything to do with AI monkeys that we mentioned we might have a chat about. We've got loads more to talk about, but I think we've kind of covered so much. I'm going to have to re-listen to this several times to capture all of the learnings. But is there, if as we wrap up, is there anything that you think we could have covered that we need to add in, or any other points of clarification to make just this general chat about AI and how you see things differently and how you bring simplicity to quite a complex area that people maybe don't understand? Any other metaphors or things that you share with people when they go, oh, I didn't realize that? Or, and it's fine if there isn't.
I think there's probably two things. Remembering that AI isn't just your chatbots like ChatGPT. AI is where humans, where machines do things that humans can do. And it's all over the place. You know, the minute you pick your phone up in the morning, you're using AI built into devices. And so once you've got that, is recognizing it's going, how do you use that that makes your life easier, faster, better, can make a positive difference? And that collaborative approach with AI, I think, will make your life a lot easier. And if at any point you feel an overwhelm, step back. If you look at any of the kind of communications about AI, you know, every single day there's something new come out, a new capability, a new change. But a lot of it's not relevant to you as an individual. So focus on something that's relevant to you in your life. You know, if you're writing something, you know, it's fantastic at proofreading it. So it'll tell you grammar, does it make sense? You know, use it as a almost like a coach in your pocket.
Yeah, and I've used it in that way, and I advise lots of my clients to use it in that way. So once they know a theory or taking insights discovery or NLP, if you know a technique, you can go, well, how can I use perceptual positions in this context? And it that's knowing how to tell it what to use. And
yeah.
So but that's based on your knowledge. So I think my learning from this week's painful learning is that exactly what you've said, which is we've got to bring our human brain to ask the correct thing of the AI rather than assuming that it knows everything. So, yeah, I think the co-pilot or the creative partner working alongside you that doesn't know everything you know, and it's easy to assume that it would know everything you know, but it doesn't. It's just a series of little bits. What did you call them? Tokens. Just a load of tokens.
Load of tokens. Little zeros and ones that come across as talking a good game.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing your insight with us. Lovely to talk to you today, Bryce. Thanks for your time. And
Thank
I'm sure we'll get you on again to keep us updated on maybe we talk about AI monkeys next time.
Oh, I think we could have a great chat about AI monkeys.
See you later. Bye. Bryce, thank you. He said, why not look at one thing that you don't enjoy and ask whether AI could help? So pick one thing this week. And if it doesn't work for you, remember you've still learned something. You've learned how not to do it. And remember, you're not behind. Maybe you just need to not start so big. Thanks for listening to The Debrief Show. We really appreciate you joining us. And you'll find more information in the show notes. If you want to listen to more episodes, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And we're also on YouTube. Just search for Dee Clayton and look for The Debrief Show. You could check out episode 11 in season 1, where we spoke to Maggie Sarfo about AI as well. So check that one out. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please follow the show and share this episode and others with colleagues or friends who you think will also find it helpful. And until next time, keep bringing out the best in yourself, your team, and your communications.